Okay, we'll begin. This is Marcia Gustafson at the Health Department, and we're most happy to have with us Josh Cox, who is the Town Health Officer and Fire Marshal in St. Albans, giving us a presentation on fire and life safety. Please have your phones on mute until we get to the question and answer time, when you can unmute when you ask a question. So, you welcome.
Thank you. Like Marcia said, my name is Josh Cox. I've been with St. Albans City Fire Department for about 6 years and health officer now for, I believe, about 4 years. And today I'm just going to briefly cover a few fire and life safety issues as you may come across them in the role of health officer. Before we get into that, if you take a look at the, I believe it's a second slide, is just kind of a quick agenda. I think it's important to talk about or just be a little aware of the housing stock and predominant construction types in Vermont that you definitely encounter all throughout the state, and then how that can impact some of the fire and life safety issues that that you may come across in the role of health officer. So on slide 3, I found some interesting statistics out there, mostly from the U.S. Census Bureau, about a third of Vermont's housing stock was built prior to 1940. And that is a huge factor in fire safety, as we'll get into a little bit here. Just on a side note, too, is an interesting fact that I discovered just as being fire marshal in St. Albans. We've been able to determine the age of most of that rental housing stock in St. Albans City. And through that, we were able to find out that the average age of the housing stock in St. Albans City, the rental housing stock, is about 112 years old, which that number was, I think, a little shocking to figure out, but nonetheless, it's true. So it really shows you the age and the vintage of the housing stock that we're seeing not only in St. Albans, but throughout the state of Vermont. So on the next slide, we get into what's known as balloon frame construction, which was really the predominant form of construction for all types of dwellings, not just residential, in the United States, from the 1880s up until about 1940, and specifically very popular construction type in the New England area. Balloon frame construction basically is the studs or the walls themselves typically extend all the way from the basement through the first floor, second floor, third floor, etc., all the way up to the attic. It'll typically be one stud. And then from there, the way the building was typically constructed, the ledger plank for each floor would then be directly attached to the studs of the walls themselves. So as you can see in the photo here, this was a balloon frame constructed house that was being demolished in St. Albans a while back. This type of construction leaves voids between floors and between the studs up into the joist in the attic. Now, what these voids create basically is just a natural path of travel for combustion, for toxic smoking gases that the combustion produces. So again, you know, going back to that statistic, you have to really think about that. This is about a third of the housing stock in Vermont is built like this. In about the early 40s, platform construction really became the predominant form of construction, which is the studs were built, the walls were built on the actual platform of the floor itself. So the floor would extend all the way out to the outer wall of the building, unlike balloon frames. So the platform of the floors themselves would create that inherent fire block from floor to floor. So just meaning a fire on the first floor wouldn't all of a sudden be in the attic like a balloon frame construction. So on the next slide, I What continues on a lot of the slides that follow are just some photos that I've taken over the years I've been health officer in St. Albans, of things I've directly observed in rental housing. And then I'm just kind of trying to tie that back to fire safety. So taking what we just talked about with balloon frame construction, I encounter this a lot, which are just holes in walls, ceilings, floors. Any kind of opening in a ceiling or a floor or any of these structural members for a rental housing unit, specifically when there's more than one rental housing unit in a building, it creates that opening, all that fire and the toxic smoke and gases need to travel from one apartment to another, and or you know, up into an attic, or even if it's a single family rental, to travel rapidly throughout the structure. And these are just two examples. You know, just even what may look like kind of an innocent hole in the wall, and you can see the lath and plaster construction in that photo on the left. That's all it would take. I mean, for fire and toxic smoke and gas to travel inside that wall and continue until it hits some kind of impediment in the wall. The next slide also shows just a few more examples that I've seen during inspections. And then what I've taken is what I feel is kind of our tool as a health officer on how to confront this issue of these holes in walls and structural members that can allow fire and things like that to travel. But it's also, you know, as health officers, obviously, we don't enforce the fire code. But we can enforce the health code, obviously, when it's impacting fire safety in this instance. This is the Rental Housing Health Code, Section 8A. Just states, every owner of a dwelling or rooming house shall provide and maintain the foundation, floors, walls, doors, windows, ceilings, roof, staircases, chimneys, and other structural elements of his or her dwelling unit, rooming house, or rooming unit, so that it is weathertight, rodent-proof, and in good repair. So I'm taking this this section of the Rental Housing Health Code and interpreting it that, obviously, holes in an interior wall, weathertight typically isn't an issue, but I think a landlord would be hard-pressed to claim that walls, like in the examples of the photos that in the presentation here, are in good repair. So I would, in an inspection myself, I would document this as a violation of the Rental Housing Health Code and therefore need to be corrected. And then just as a side effect of enforcing that the health code, you've also kind of helped out this building to be a little more compliant with the fire code. You know, so now the landlord is going to fix these holes in the walls, and therefore, hopefully, if there is a fire in the future, it won't be able to easily access the interiors of walls and travel from unit to unit. So on the next slide, I took some statistics from the State Fire Marshal report provided by Division of Fire Safety every year. And these were the numbers from their latest report from 2012, which really show the leading causes of fires in Vermont, which are, number one, has been heating, and it's been heating, I believe, for a decade plus, I think, since the State Fire Marshal started compiling these reports. We're gonna get into that and the health officer's role for heating issues as they relate to the health code. And then cooking. Cooking is, I think in my mind, it's more of the tenant behavior, which is really kind of an area that for the most part is not addressed by the health code. And then the third most predominant issue as a single item issue for causing fires is just electrical things in nature. And that is definitely something covered by the housing health code that we'll talk about here. So on the following slide is just a picture of a heating exhaust vent. or sometimes referred to as a power vent. These types of vents are just one part of the components of a heating system for a dwelling unit. And the next slide even also shows, you know, other components of heating systems. It shows, you know, a furnace in a basement. My photo on the right of that slide, I apologize, it's a little blurry, but it's something I look for in enforcing the fire code, and I'll kind of get into how that can connect to the health code, but that is a tag on a furnace that was placed there by someone such as Vermont Gas or someone whose job it is and they're certified to inspect heat, gas-powered or fuel-fired heating systems. And the fire code requires that they have to tag these systems no less than once every 2 years. Now, I typically look for that, like I said, in enforcing the fire code, but I think that's also a very good clue that health officers can look for when you're addressing some sort of heating issue complaint. You can look at the furnace or the boiler or whatever they have, and if it is a fuel-fired heating appliance, it should be tagged, and that tag should have a date on it within 2 years of you standing there looking at it. And if it doesn't, it's just kind of a clue for you to know that, you know, perhaps there is something wrong with the heating appliance. It hasn't really been looked over recently by a qualified professional to make a determination if it's functioning properly. So I include that just as kind of a FYI, that it's just another piece of the puzzle that I think you as a health officer can look for in heating systems. The photo on the left, that's one of the more obvious tags. That was a tag by Vermont Gas, one of their red or I think yellow tags that they place on furnaces or heaters when there has been some sort of safety issue documented. That definitely is a telltale sign that this heating system is not functioning properly. So in the next slide, I'm not sure, I didn't number them, but the slide that shows a picture of a heating piping vent, exhaust vent, this just has the excerpt of as the health officer, the health code section that you can use to gain compliance with heating systems, which just states, heating facilities shall be properly functioning and in good repair. So again, there's that phrase, good repair. Is a heating system that has been red tagged by Vermont Gas, is that considered in good repair? I mean, I personally would think no, absolutely not. And it's something that you as the health officer can definitely address. So just on an aside too, the photo below that shows what was a exhaust piping that went to an exterior vent for a gas furnace. And as you can see, again, I would not consider this to be properly functioning or in good repair. The way it was installed or even over the years, perhaps somehow these two sections of exhaust pipe became disconnected. So now the furnace is venting carbon monoxide directly into the basement. So definitely that, while it's again addressed but in the fire code, I think this is also something that clearly would be within the jurisdiction of a health officer to say something as well. So in the next slide, we start to talk about electrical issues. So again, the rental housing health code states all electrical systems in dwellings, rooming houses, and on rental mobile home lots shall be maintained in safe working condition. So it's again another phrase kind of like good repair that obviously I think there's a lot of subjectivity involved by the health officer to make a judgment call when, you know, he or she sees something like, for instance, the stove burner at a rental home. You know, I mean, would you as a health officer believe this stovetop to be in safe working condition? You know, I would say no. I think it's clearly not in safe working condition. I think the photo on the right too was a little bit of a challenge for me at first to kind of connect it to the rental housing health code. because you actually see, I think the stovetop appears to be in safe working condition. However, it's the manner in which it's installed is directly next to some combustible cabinets. And you can even see singe marks on the cabinet door. To me, this is not maintained in a safe working condition. I think if it were maintained in a safe working condition, it would either be moved to another location, or perhaps the combustible cabinetry removed or relocated to another part of the dwelling. So again, I just show it as an example of just some of the kind of varying issues that can come back to an electrical issue. The next slide again shows some more examples I've seen. When I see things like broken electrical outlets, light fixtures only supported by the bare electrical wires, the light switch on the right installed where the electrical wiring is just coming right through the front of the plate, I think it would be a pretty easy interpretation of the code to say that these are not maintained in safe working condition. The next slide again shows just some other examples I've seen. One is a hole this was kind of a unique, very unique situation, hopefully. A hole was punched in the ceiling and floor of one apartment to the next apartment because the apartment below had their electricity shut off. So they ran an extension cord through this floor to power the unit where the electricity was shut off. Photo on the right shows just your average light fixture, and someone, hopefully not a licensed electrician, but someone has connected the electrical wires and just not finished the installation properly. You know, whether it's putting that junction in an electrical junction box that hopefully is waterproof, because this installation, you can't see from the photo, but this installation was right over a sink. Again, I think in my mind, none of these electrical systems that in these photos could be considered to be maintained in safe working condition. So the next slide is a slide I took directly from the Division of Fire Safety, and this ties directly back into some of the electrical systems we've seen in various states of disrepair. Now, you know, we're talking about rental housing, which by state statute is a public building. And so the state fire code applies to public buildings. Having said that, that means most of these electrical issues, if they're going to be addressed properly, they really should be addressed by a licensed electrician, not, you know, some weekend warrior electrician. It needs to be someone who has a certification with the Division of Fire Safety. That certification's up to date. In a lot of cases, they need to pull an electric work notice through the division. Now, you know, again, I know this is, a lot of this is peripheral to the health code, but I think it kind of ties into the safe working condition aspect that's in the health code for electrical systems. You know, if someone who is not an electrician and is not trained or certified in electrical work is working to correct some of these electrical issues, is it really going to be in safe working condition? That's why I show you this as a tool for you. If it's new for any of you, it's on the Division of Fire Safety's website. It's something I print off frequently to give to landlords, just to let them know that, okay, so we've seen violation XYZ in your rental dwelling. Here's the permits that you're going to be required to pull from the state Fire Marshal's Office, Division of Fire Safety, to properly correct those issues. So now we've kind of covered electrical and heating issues as it relates to fire and life safety. The next issue that I think is starting to get a lot more press, I think because of maybe some reality television shows and things like that, but is hoarding. It's something I'm sure, you know, if your health officer and you're out there getting into the rental housing stock in your community, I'm sure you've come across it at least once or twice. It seems to be, you know, fairly predominant in some areas. How hoarding can affect the rental housing code. My interpretation, and I put the section here, section 10, subsection B2, just states, every occupant shall exercise reasonable care in the use of his or her dwelling unit, rooming unit, or rental mobile home lot, and shall maintain it in such a manner that it does not create a health hazard for his or her neighbors. So you can see from this slide and even the next slide as well, are some photos of, I think, what could be safely considered to be hoarding in rental housing. I think as a health officer, you would have a strong argument that this does create a health hazard for the neighbors of these apartments. In both cases, these were multi-unit apartment buildings. So in these situations, definitely thinning out the amount of belongings in there does a few things. One, it limits the amount of fire load in the building, but then it also limits the structural wear and tear on a building. You know, a lot of people don't realize buildings, for the most part, are not designed to hold some of the weight that is put on these buildings by hoarders sometimes. And it can also even lead to harborage for vermin, things like that, which is definitely in the realm of the health code. So I'm going to try to rush along here just so everyone has time for questions at the end. The next slide also is excerpted from the same part of the health code, talking about the tenant, it's their responsibility to maintain their dwelling unit in a manner that doesn't create a health hazard for their neighbors. This is something as a health officer I've documented and had a tenant correct. Storage of hazardous materials in their unit. This is just, you know, what looks like an innocuous propane canister on the left, but also I've had a photo of a propane canister after a structure fire on the right, and you can see once that tank ruptures what a danger it could be to everybody in that dwelling unit. So the next slide just shows kind of a general idea I wanted to bring up, which is the fire code for the state of Vermont and the rental housing code for the state of Vermont, they both really have similar goals. They overlap in quite a few areas. So, you know, we've talked about some with heating and the electrical issues, but it's all about life safety and just the quality of life of Vermonters. Quickly, I'm trying to finish through here just to give everyone time, but the next slide shows a good example of where the codes overlap. This was a living room in an apartment where just the couch had been placed in front of the main entrance to the apartment and the secondary escape for this area. So the code says, every habitable room shall include at least one window or door in good repair located on an outside wall that is capable of being opened to admit fresh air. I think obviously you can't really open that door with the couch in front of it. Now, the fire code talks about you can't obstruct exits, so they can't be used in the case of an emergency. So this would be one area too where really I think the health code and the fire code overlap. Their wording is a little different, but they really get you to the same goal, which would be to unobstruct that exit for either the tenant getting fresh air into the unit or escaping during a fire or an emergency. The next slide shows just some statistics that I found on the U.S. Census Bureau's website. How much rental units are out there in the state of Vermont? This does not include single-family rentals, but just really shows you that there's a lot of rental housing units that are out there in the state of Vermont, and the Rental Housing Health Code applies to them all. The next slide is just you as a health officer. I just want you to know, a lot of you probably do know, there are a lot of resources out there to help you. The listserv for the town health officers is a great resource. Your local division of fire safety office is another great resource. And even just on a much more local scale, your local fire chief. Giving him or her a call is, for some of these issues, you could find a wealth of knowledge there too. And I don't hear the local fire chief brought up a lot in some of the fire code issues that pertain to the housing health code issues I've heard around the state on the listserv. And I just want folks to know there's a fire chief in every municipality in the state of Vermont, and they're a great resource that can be tapped into. So with that, that is all the material I have, and I'd just like to open it up, I guess, if anyone has any questions, I'd try to provide you an answer.
Are there any questions?
Hi, I have a question. Sharon Kelly from the Town of Essex. I'm actually the zoning administrator, but thought that... Am I there?
Yes, you are.
You're here.
And thought that this webinar would be helpful, and it was. Thank you very much. Specific to hoarding, I thought that unless a complaint came in, how will you know if someone's inside and hoarding and it's to the extreme that the pictures show? How can you get in there, though, if you only have hearsay and not, say, a formal complaint?
Well, that's a good question. I think there's kind of two methods, I think, for a health officer to become aware of an issue like that. One is, just like you said, a complaint. Another would be, and what we have in St. Albans, and I know a few other municipalities like Winooski or City of Burlington have, which are mandatory or compulsory inspections, where we in St. Albans are going out and we are inspecting on a periodic basis all of the rental housing units within St. Albans City. So we're coming across a lot more issues than, say, a health officer, I think, who probably just responds to complaints. But yeah, I mean, it would have to be brought to the health officer's attention somehow.
So your inspections that you do periodically, yearly, is as health officer or as the Department of Fire Safety, or both?
Well, really, both, and even there's a third leg to the program in St. Albans, which is one, yeah, we have a cooperative inspection agreement with the Division of Fire Safety, so that allows us to, the St. Albans City Fire Department, to enforce the fire code as adopted by the state of Vermont. Secondly, within the fire department resides the health officer office, so we're also enforcing rental housing health code. And then thirdly, St. Albans City has a few municipal ordinances that have been passed that directly address housing, living conditions, things like that, that we also enforce. So when we go to do one inspection, we're really looking at that rental dwelling unit through those three lenses.
I see. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
I'm Bonnie Lucas from West Rutland. I'm the zoning officer plus the health officer, and in the course of this webinar, which is excellent, by the way, it occurred to me, is there any town in the state that has a standard rule for every time a rental